Good morning, good morning, good morning. It's Tommy Howe. Welcome to the inaugural edition of Tree Huggers International, a brand new public affairs and awareness program for Seattle and the Puget Sound and all of Western Washington. This past fall and winter was brutal on the trails here in Washington State. From flooding to windstorms, Mount Rainier National Park was closed for the first time since its inception in 1899. And while Mount Rainier had some of the more sensational damage, trails across Western Washington have been affected in the state's national forests, state parks, and other public lands, and it's going to take months to assess the damage and prioritize what needs to be fixed. And joining me this morning here at 107.7 The End are Lauren Braden and Jonathan Gusso from the Washington Trails Association, whose members and volunteers can be found on trails across the state during the summertime working on trail projects. They are the voice of hikers and outdoor enthusiasts here in Washington State. We are very pleased to have you two here this morning representing Washington Trails Association for the very first edition, the inaugural edition of Tree Huggers International. Welcome.
Oh, it's our pleasure to be here.
Thanks for having us.
One of the things that surprised me the first time that I came across a Washington Trails Association crew was at Wallace Falls State Park years ago when I was there with some friends. And the thing that really impressed me was the age of so many of your volunteers. They seemed to be in their 60s and 70s, and they were in such darn good shape, and they were having such a great time. I felt like a sloth, you know, and they were just so kind and so cool. And, you know, you see them breaking their back and working with railroad ties and, I mean, large rocks. And where do you get your volunteers from? Are these folks who have been with the organization for a long time?
It's really a variety. And, you know, our volunteers range in age from like 3 years old to about 87. If you're out on the weekdays, especially, you might see folks that are closer to retirement age. But we actually have at Wallace Falls State Park in the past few years, we've had youth crews out that are exclusively high school students building a brand new trail out there. So we really have folks of all ages, and some are hikers that want to give back a day or two a summer to the trails that they hike on. Others are we have corporate work parties out that are out for team building. We have folks out that need to do community service for high school requirements, and we do have folks that are just retired that want to do something in their spare time that is good for their bodies and good for the trails.
You guys got some great coverage in last Saturday's PI as well, and there was a great story about all the work going on at the Annette Lake Trail, mm-hmm. which I haven't been on in a couple of years. And was that one of the trails that's like a priority for you guys right now? Or
well, it's a heavily used trail. It sees a lot of visitorship every year, and so we work on trails that are more and less used. But Annette Lake sees so many hikers, and it's just really an important part of our trail base in the I-90 corridor. So we just think it's a critical resource, and so we put a lot of time on those trails. But we also make sure that we get, you know, sort of deeper into the backcountry, places that are a couple, you know, further than a couple 3 miles from the trailhead. But yeah, we work on those heavily used trails because really it benefits our constituency, which is hikers all over the state.
It is volunteer work. I mean, people want to give back and they just come on out.
Yeah, we have we had 1,700 volunteers out last year on trails throughout the state. We have a handful of paid crew leaders, although in every given work party that you're on, you will have a crew leader that's wearing a blue hat. And they're sort of, you know, running the show, the project lead. And then we'll have orange hats that are assistant crew leaders. And the orange hats are always volunteers. And sometimes the blue hats, the crew leaders, are volunteers as well. And then if you're just out volunteering for the day, you get to wear a green hat. And you get your own green hat. If you come out with WTA 5 times, you get a personalized hard hat, which I just earned my own last year. I'm very proud of.
Oh, very good.
Mine just says Lauren on it, which is my name, but a lot of folks choose nicknames that might have something to do with the way they hike or the way they do trail work or just the nickname that they've had their whole life. So that's kind of cool.
Now, I've done some trail work in the past. I did some when I was living here and some when I was living in California. And it's hard work. Yeah, we got to move this rock and we got to move dirt around. And I regrettably have such a poor engineering skills, I suppose. It doesn't occur. Oh, the water goes this way, downhill. That makes sense. A lot of the folks, they have a lot of experience working on trails. Where did they originally get some of this experience? Are they engineers or are they just bright outdoor-related people like that?
We see a lot of engineers, actually, on our work parties. A lot of people, especially come out on our work day, our weekday work parties, are actually retired Boeing engineers. And so they have remarkable engineering skills. But, you know, the fact is that we really make sure that people work to their level. So, you know, when you have people who are in their teens, who are very young, and people who are, you know, basically, as Lauren said, every age between 3 and 87, we make sure that people have something that they can do that they're going to have fun doing, and that they're going to feel a sense of accomplishment after having done. And we really make sure that people work up to their level and don't really overwork themselves. We want them to come back.
Yeah.
And a huge part of that is making sure that they have a good experience. They really feel like they've accomplished something. So, yeah, it's a bit of work, but it's a lot of fun.
Is it difficult to get, for lack of a better term, young people interested in doing some kind of trail work or outdoor work? And I forget where I saw this, and it might have been in the paper, but it seemed that a lot of high school kids, I suppose, because you live in the Pacific Northwest, you almost take for granted the fact that we have this remarkable ecosystem around us and these remarkable outdoor opportunities. A lot of kids, they go boarding at Crystal, you know, during the wintertime, and maybe they go out to Mount Rainier once or twice in the summertime, but the stewardship idea. Do you think it's harder to get young kids involved with that?
Well, one of the reasons we started our youth program, which was started about 5 years ago, was because one of our co-founders, Ira Spring, who wrote with Harvey Manning the 100 Hike series published by the Mountaineers Books, this was a big issue for him, and he called it green bonding, and he was very concerned about our young people not connecting with the outdoors, and that we have this sort of graying population of hikers in this state. And if you look at our wild areas, Alpine Lakes Wilderness, North Cascades National Park, Olympic National Park, all of these were not protected by, some congressman saying, I'm going to protect this. They all started from grassroots efforts of hikers that banded together and worked hard to get these areas protected. And so from Washington Trails Association's perspective, in addition to trail work, we do a lot of advocacy to protect trails. And we started our youth program to try to engage young people more in the outdoors that surrounded them. And it's been very successful. Actually, our youth volunteer vacations filled up to capacity last summer, and they're starting to fill this summer. They'll be spending 7 full weeks out either at Wallace Falls State Park or Beacon Rock State Park, building new trail. And so that's connecting these young folks on the ground with the places that are surrounding them that they will hopefully someday grow to love and steward and protect.
I'm really glad you brought up Ira Spring, and I was going to ask you about Mr. Spring. If you could just explain his connection and his heritage with the WTA.
Well, Ira was one of the giants, and still is one of the giants of the outdoor community. Nationwide, he was he came back from the military and with a love of the outdoors. He was actually in the 10th Mountain Division.
In the 10th Mountain? Is that right?
Yeah, he came back with a love of the outdoors and a passion for preserving the outdoors. And in 1968, founded Washington Trails Association along with Louise Marshall. The two of them actually pulled the organization together in the very beginning to actually oppose a copper mine that was being proposed for development on the shores of Image Lake in the Glacier Peak Wilderness, this incredibly beautiful patch of country with amazing views of Glacier Peak. So they actually banded Washington Trails Association together to make sure that hikers were getting their voices heard to stop that mine. And of course, to this day, that area is protected. So he really created an atmosphere of advocacy among hikers in Washington State. He's critically important to the legacy of preserving wildlands. Ira is just very important to our organization. And you know, frankly, so is Harvey. Those 100 Hikes books have been instrumental in building support for preserving wildlands statewide. So
yeah.
Critically important guys.
Well, I think Image Lake was one of Ira Spring's favorite locations to go and take photographs.
Absolutely.
And of course, we just lost Mr. Manning a few months ago as well.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But I think when I was at the Annette Lake Trail, was a couple of years ago, was that the one that was renamed the Ira Spring Trail?
That was Mason Lake.
Mason Lake. That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But
that's
also along the I-90 corridor.
Yep.
It is.
And he was very influential in getting the Alpine Lakes Wilderness created.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And North Cascades National Park.
Yeah. Ira was in the mix in the 1984 Wilderness Bill that designated millions of new acres of protected wilderness in Washington State.
You mentioned the 1984 Wilderness Act, which, and I think the Wild Sky Wilderness that's just being created now, I think this is the first new wilderness in the state since 84. Why do you think it's taken 23 years? And again, there was 20 years between 64 and 84 as well, mm-hmm. when the original Wilderness Act was passed. Why do you think there's been such a gap or a length of time? And obviously, you know, Ira and Harvey and a lot of, for lack of a better term, the graying hikers, if you will, were getting older, and the 84 was sort of their crowning achievement. Is it harder to like draw people to that kind of advocacy now because folks are wrapped up in their daily lives, do you think?
There are lots of, you know, there are lots of reasons why it's taken lots of years to get a new wilderness bill passed. But, you know, frankly, one of the reasons is that a lot of the low-hanging wilderness fruit has been picked. A lot of the country that's totally unroaded, totally untouched, has never seen, you know, any signs of human development, has been designated as wilderness. A lot of the land that we're looking at as new wilderness in the long run is actually country that has had roads built on it that have faded away, land that many years ago might have had small timber operations on it. And sometimes it's just more difficult to make the case that ought to be wilderness. But frankly, there's no reason it shouldn't be. It's still wild land. Those, you know, if there are roads in it, they haven't been used in decades. And if there are structures in it, they're abandoned. If there's a history of mining, that's not going on any longer. But it's important as conservationists that we make the case that these lands are really important too. In the case of the Wild Sky, you know, a lot of what we have as wilderness in this state is rock and ice. It's, you know, above tree line, frankly, and it's beautiful country, but it's less ecologically important than these lowland areas that provide clean water, wildlife habitat, trout and salmon habitat.
Clean air,
exactly. And so, you know, the more that we can make the case that these lands ought to be wilderness as well, and the more we can make the case for wilderness values, that not only do these provide unparalleled recreation opportunities, but they're really important for our survival, you know, the more we're gonna see those lands designated as wilderness. And we're just really excited about Wild Sky.
Yeah.
It just needs to clear that hurdle in the Senate and go to the president's desk.
Yeah.
And if history is any guide, the Senate should not be a huge challenge.
It's good news, and I've been following that for the last couple of years. And when I was living in California for a couple of years, I was writing letters to Pombo. It was like, come on, you know, put your name on this somewhere. You'll be very happy. You'll sleep better at night.
Yeah.
A lot of the entities, like the National Forests, you work with them. You have regular people you're in contact with. Do they ask, hey, could you send a party out to do some work on this particular trail? Or are there places that you really identify and you bring that to the agency?
It's actually a mix of both. We try to choose projects that will be interesting to our volunteers and mix it up so that we're not clearing brush all the time. A lot of volunteers love to build foot logs and structures like puncheon or turnpike or drain dips, especially the engineering folks. They really get into engineering, like, where's this water going to go? How can we build this trail so that we divert the water off of it? But the projects themselves are largely driven by the needs of the agencies. The National Forest Service, of course, years past used to have paid crews that supplemented volunteer crews to do trail work. And as budgets have been cut throughout the past decade, volunteer crews have become more and more important to them. And there are trail coordinators on the National Forest that we work very closely with to choose projects and to coordinate our work.
And then when I was working at Federation Forest State Park last year, I think the first couple of days I was there, I was told that was a location that WTA like to actually go and take folks and demonstrate a lot of the techniques as to how to properly maintain trails, et cetera. And have you had a relationship with them for a long time? Or?
We've worked with the state park system pretty extensively. I can't speak specifically to what we've done at Federation Forest, but I know we've worked there. There are certain areas where it's a lot easier to train volunteers than in others, for sure, particularly lowland areas that are a little flatter.
Yeah,
it's easier to train people how to, you know, in the techniques of volunteer trail maintenance.
And then going back to some of the engineering terms you mentioned, Lauren, and again, I've done this before, but I may not have known exactly what in the heck I was constructing or what I was digging. Could you go over a couple of those terms that you mentioned?
Yeah, we can do that. It's so interesting. I was a hiker for years before I ever did a trail work party, and I was, you know, hiking on trails and frankly, before I became involved with Washington Trails Association, I was one of those folks that really thought that trails just sort of appeared, you know, when people hiked. You just sort of carve out this trail. And it's really amazing once you do trail work and you realize how much engineering goes into a trail, especially in Western Washington with all the rain we get. So much thought goes into how rain is going to go off that trail and whether or not it could wash it away and keep certain areas dry, etc. So one of the terms that I mentioned, puncheon, is sort of like a boardwalk that we frequently put in either through muddy areas or wetlands or through fragile meadows if it's very imperative that people stay on the trail. And it basically just looks like a boardwalk. Turnpike is where we have two stringers that build up the sides of the trail, and then you fill it in with gravel, and then you fill that in with dirt, and it sort of builds up the trail. So it can sort of look like a bridge when you're going through it. When you go hiking next, you will be looking around, and you will see both of these structures everywhere.
And these, they actually look a little on the raw side for the first season that they're out there, but after a season of hiking and rain and, you know, all of the things that happen in the Pacific Northwest, they disappear, but they still fill their function.
Right.
And just become part of the landscape.
The reasonable wear and tear makes them more part of the landscape.
Mm-hmm. It's neat to see.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Lauren Braden and Jonathan Guzzo from the Washington Trails Association. And earlier when we started the program, I mentioned Mount Rainier National Park. Again, that got a lot of coverage. I know Congressman Inslee, if I'm not mistaken, is the gentleman who's trying to secure some funds for the national park system.
It's actually Congressman Norm Dix,
oh,
who is
goodness,
chair
excuse
of the
me.
Interior Appropriations Committee.
There was a lot of TV coverage about the damage in the park. I'm still amazed that Route 706 over by, what was it, the Sunrise Campground just sort of vanished into the Nisqually River. Mm-hmm. Is that a big priority right now for WTA? Are you doing some work there this spring, or do you have folks going around and seeing what trails may need to be addressed first?
Well, just sort of the overview, there was about $70 million worth of damage throughout the Mount Rainier National Park and National Forests, and about $36 million of that was in Mount Rainier, and that includes damage to roads and trails. And so that means about $35 million was elsewhere. In national forest land. So our trail triage this spring and summer will be both at Mount Rainier and on national forest lands, particularly Gifford Pinchot National Forest and Mount Baker Snoqualmie National Forest, doing trail repair. Our efforts so far have been hindered in large part because of snow. As the snow starts to melt, our crews will be following that snow melt line up the mountains, doing trail repairs as we find them. We know at Mount Rainier there are dozens of foot logs out, bridges out, trails washed away. We will be at Mount Rainier 5 days a week this summer, so there will be plenty of opportunities for people to volunteer. And just to quickly tell you, to volunteer with us, you can sign up right on our website, which is wta.org, or you can give us a call at our office, and our number is 206-625-1367. And in addition to Mount Rainier, we'll be throughout Mount Baker Snoqualmie and the Gifford Pinchot all summer doing storm damage repair to trails.
Yeah, I saw in the PI article on Saturday, and this is from the article, this is not necessarily from the WTA, but I just wanted to read some of these figures. Mm-hmm. There's 3 washed out miles of the White Chuck Trail, which is up towards the Glacier Peak Wilderness. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been on that trail in a million years. And the last I heard, that was washed out like in 2003, I think. But that's over $600,000 of work that still needs to be done there. The smash bridge to the Big Four Ice Caves off of the Mountain Loop Highway, $478,000. Holy smokes. And then damaged bridge providing access to Big Heart Lake, $288,000. That's just basically the estimated amount of money that it's going to cost to get all this stuff fixed.
Well, one interesting thing about the article that you just mentioned that was in the PI, those big ticket items that you just listed off, particularly like the bridges to Big Four Ice Caves and Big Heart Lake, those projects are actually quite beyond the scope of what volunteers can do. Those are big steel bridges. They'll be, in some cases, helicoptering in materials for those. And those are the kinds of projects that we will absolutely need federal dollars secured for. Those are not projects that volunteers can do.
Okay.
And I just wanted to point out that keying off the Big Four Ice Caves Trail, you know, frankly, that's in the Darrington Ranger District. 70% of the trails in the Darrington Ranger District are either unhikeable or inaccessible because of road washouts. Mm. One of the most beautiful districts in the state. It's, you know, home to the Mountain Loop Highway. Monte Cristo.
The Seattle River Road is up that way.
Seattle River Road, just incredible hikes. 70% of the trails you can't use up there right now. And that's from a mix of the 2003 and 2006 storms combined actually blew out a huge number of hiking opportunities in the near term. I also wanted to let your listeners know that, yeah, Congressman Dix is incredibly important as chair of the Interior Appropriations Committee now. And we're very fortunate that he has a really strong commitment to public lands protection in Washington State. But Congressman Inslee and Congressman Baird came together and pulled together a letter from every member of the delegation to Congressman Dix saying, we think that these opportunities are critically important on Mount Rainier National Park, Gifford Pinchot National Forest, Mount Baker Snoqualmie National Forest, and Olympic National Park. And as a delegation, we really need to get together and do something to bring these opportunities back online. So it's scary to see the extent of the damage, but it's heartening to me that we have a federal congressional delegation that's united behind preserving our hiking opportunities. And storms are sort of one piece of this puzzle. Fires in the Wenatchee Okanagan National Forest are another huge piece. Fires have done hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage to trails in the Passaitan Wilderness, in the Aniat Roadless area, which is just on the border of the Glacier Peak Wilderness.
Yeah,
critically important country. A lot of those trails are either dangerous or unhikeable just due to major fire damage, and so. There are lots of problems statewide, but we're fortunate that we have a delegation that's committed to coming up with a solution.
And that's wonderful, too. And it looks like the timing for having the right folks in Congress to help out seemed to coincide with the storms last fall. But, I mean, the WTA is also addressing trail needs in the Passaitan Wilderness and areas that basically are further away from the Puget Sound on the east side of the Cascade Crest. Is there a branch of the WTA that's doing work, like, in the areas north of Spokane? I know those are some very remote areas there, like in the Colville National Forest. Up around there.
We actually have a work party in the Pend'Oreille area this summer, a week-long work party. We have these week-long work parties. We call them volunteer vacations. And those are opportunities for volunteers to spend a whole week doing trail work. And they're remarkably popular. We only have a few spots left this year, actually, on them. But for us, they're an opportunity for us to get further into the backcountry. Because on a day of trail work, you can really only reach the first 3 to 4 miles of trail. On volunteer vacations, we can go in, we can set up camp, and work further from there. And so we will have a volunteer vacation in the Pend'Oreille area near the Colville this summer. But we don't do quite as much work in the far eastern Washington. In east central Washington, like in the Chelan area, Lake Chelan, we have a volunteer vacation there right now. Logging out from blowdowns that happen every winter on those trails. So,
and we have a great program up in the Mattow Valley.
Oh,
a lot of great volunteers and a terrific crew leader located up in the Mattow Valley, who are doing work in the Okanagan National Forest. They're just really great, committed people, and they have some beautiful country to work in. I am really jealous.
Oh yeah, that is gorgeous country up there. If someone is going on one of these working holidays, so to speak, what could they expect? What would you wind up doing if you go out for that sort of thing? What are they going to feed you?
Well, they're going to feed you well. I have not been able to clear out time in my calendar for one, but I can't wait to do so because I hear that the food is fantastic. We actually will pack in much of the equipment and food and tents and all of those things on llamas or horses. So we pack in fresh vegetables and wild salmon and... I think folks eat pretty well. We'll do them from Saturday to Saturday on a given week, and volunteers can expect to work 3 days, have a day off, and then work 3 days, and then go home. The day off, volunteers sometimes choose to just hang out by a lake and go swimming, or go on a day hike, or kind of explore on their own. But as with all of our work parties, we encourage people to work at your own pace. If you want to take a break, please do so. We take lots of scheduled breaks anyway, for lunch and a morning break and an afternoon break. And, you know, we're there to get work done, but we're also there to have fun.
And you can go to WTA.org.
WTA.org.
And then what's the phone number for Washington Trails Association?
It's 206-625-1367.
625-1367.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And folks who have questions about some of these work parties or even going out for the day, you can call and get information.
Yeah, and I encourage folks to go to our website because it's a terrific resource for hikers. You can find trip reports there, backcountry recipes. We have guided hikes that you can go on. There are other ways to engage with Washington Trails Association beyond trail work. So we just encourage folks to check out our website.
WTA.org.
I would just like to throw out a caution to hikers this summer because of the storm damage in particular. It is going to be a very different hiking season out there. There are plenty of trails that are still open and accessible, but given the extent of the damage we've had, it's very important that people really research conditions before heading out. Call ahead, make sure that the trail is open. And when you get back, log a trip report either on our website, WTA.org, or with the Forest Service to let other hikers know the conditions of trails because, frankly, a lot of the damage out there is still unknown.
Right, whether it's windfall or snow or whatever.
Exactly.
Well, wonderful. Thanks again for joining us this morning on the inaugural edition of Tree Huggers International. That wound up being the working title of the show. Now it's just the name of the show. But in the upcoming weeks, we'll be making these programs available at The End on Demand at 1077theend.com. Also, as a programming note, the road into the Hoh Rainforest at Olympic National Park, that finally reopened this past week. You may recall that was part of the damage and closures that occurred during last fall's storms. In fact, you may recall someone visiting the area in a rental car got the rental car stuck out on a bar in the middle of the river. And according to an announcement from Olympic National Park, visitors should use caution because of continuing work on the road. One section that washed away at West Twin Creek, that is now spanned by a one-lane bridge. But the Hoh campground is open as well as the visitor center, and it will be open daily for the summer season. That will be starting on May the 25th. Also, my friends at the Washington Trails Association got me up to speed on the fact that the North Cascades Highway, that is now open for the season. That actually opened 2 weeks ahead of schedule despite all the snowfall we had this past winter and all the storm damage last fall. And finally, Chinook Pass, Highway 410 on the east side of Mount Rainier, that should be reopening around May the 24th, according to the Washington Department of Transportation. Thanks again for joining us for Tree Huggers International. And again, a very, very special thanks to Lauren Braden and Jonathan Gusso from the Washington Trails Association for coming in on the program this morning. You can check out more at their website at WTA.org. The opinions and views represented on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of the entire staff and management of 1077 The End. If you have questions or comments about the content of this program, Tree Huggers International, you're welcome to contact me, Tommy Howe, at THOUGH@entercom.com. That's THOUGH@entercom.com. Thanks again for joining us for Tree Huggers International. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 7:30. Jim Keller's Resurrection Flashback Sunday on the way next. 1077 The End, KNDD, Seattle.